It is possible that men and women naturally communicate differently.
Ross kissed me.
No! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!
It's unbelievable!
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!
Okay, all right, we want to hear everything.
And then I kissed her.
Tongue?
Yeah.
Cool.
That is from the sitcom Friends. While men and women might speak differently, there's now some evidence there's no difference when we're writing. Brian Larson is an assistant professor of rhetoric and technical communication at Georgia Tech, and he recently spearheaded a study that looks at possible differences in communication between genders when we write. And Brian joins me now. It's good to have you.
It's good to be here.
Also with me again is Falguni Sheth. She's a professor of philosophy at Emory's Department of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. Hello again.
Hi there.
First of all, you guys tried to be as objective as possible, but when it comes to gender differences, how do you do that? How did you control for implicit biases?
Well, in the case of this study, we didn't count this as people. The computer counted the language variations.
So you took humans out of it.
Right. So the computer knows which texts are written by men and which are written by women, and it tallies up the characteristics that we were looking to study, and it told us whether there were any statistical differences between them.
Why did you focus on writing in particular? Because we have had studies in the past on how we speak, whether we use passive language, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So not so much writing in particular, but professional discourse was interesting to me because a lot of the studies that show gender differences are done in environments where the men and women aren't working to achieve the same kinds of social objectives. So by looking at, in this study, for instance, looking at papers written by law students who'd had similar training for about a year and who are trying to achieve the same end, we could see whether that allowed them to focus on the task and to abandon any gendered habitual or habitual gendered differences in their language. So in other words, if we set men and women to the same task, do they communicate the same way? And the answer, at least in our study, was yes. They're indistinguishable. So the example you give of Ross and Rachel or whoever it was kissing on Friends, I don't remember anymore.
Could have been anyone.
It's been a while since I've watched that show. But that example, you have women communicating in the wild, so to speak. But they may be acculturated to communicate that way by all sorts of things going on in their lives. We push boys and girls towards different kinds of activities. And as a result of that, they probably develop different kinds of language that they use in their day-to-day lives. But we wanted to see whether once they become professionalized, any of those differences remain.
And the answer is no.
The answer is no, at least in the study.
Falguni, how significant is this?
I mean, it seems to me that it kind of reproduces something that at least feminist theorists have thought about for a long time, or at least a number of us, right? That that kind of identical or similar conditions of education, acculturation, will produce similar results between men and women. So, you know, I'm not sure it's that surprising per se.
To you, but it's surprising enough to other people that's getting quite a bit of coverage and attention. And part of that, I think, is because we've had so many studies in the past that have shown big differences between the way women and men speak. We've even had recent ones that talk that, like in a business meeting, they say women are more likely to be less demanding or to apologize when they enter in, right? Say, oh, I'm sorry, I may be wrong about this, or use that kind of mitigating language. So to a certain extent, this study kind of flies in the face of what we've known in the past.
Not so much, because it seems to me that a number of these other studies, they show the differences in the way that men and women communicate or express themselves, but they don't necessarily talk about the sources of those differences. So, and I think that's really where a lot more attention has to be paid. So I know that, for example, there are different sources that talk about different brain circuitry or wiring or something like that. But on the other hand, there's something in Brian's report, you call it typification theory. I would probably call it gender stereotypes, right, or certain kinds of norms or expectations that we adjust ourselves to our environments in order to engage or speak in the ways that we think will be the most receptive. And that has a very long history in terms of gender. So that, for example, I think when I was on your show last, a few days ago, we talked about, you know, whether women, if women were more demanding, they might be able to achieve more.
Yeah, more demanding women end up earning more money.
But it's not clear that that's an absolute line, right? That in fact, if you're really demanding, it could work against you. In fact, because you're thought of as excessively aggressive, out of your league, et cetera. And this was one of the things that at some point also plagued, right, the candidacy of Hillary Clinton.
Nasty
that there
woman.
Was, yeah. Nasty, right. That kind of aggressiveness. And so it's not clear that there's this kind of infinite projection.
Well, that boundary is so sometimes, for example, women will be told to use communicative techniques that are more commonly associated with men. And one example is that women are sometimes told to deepen their voices because it makes them sound more authoritative.
Right.
But there's been a bit of a meme on the internet about something called vocal fry, which
that's
is where
if I were going to go like this.
Yeah, that's yeah. when we talk like this.
That's vocal fry.
Which is a sort of Kim Kardashian kind of sound. But that is a deepening of the voice. Women are being criticized for doing it. Men do it all the time. I mean, Ira Glass is probably the most famous example.
Noam Chomsky never left vocal fry.
Exactly. And so the thing is, you know, we tell women, deepen your voice to sound more authoritative, but don't deepen it too much, or be more assertive to get what you need, but don't be bitchy or bossy. And it's that kind of, well, what's the double bind is, I need to do more of this, but I don't know how far is too much.
Okay, well, then let me put the same question to both of you, and let me start with you, Brian. Why doesn't that bleed over into a professional written communication?
Well, I think the reason it doesn't bleed over into professional written communication is that the models are clearer for our students, right? So if you're a law student and you've been reading court opinions and court briefs for a year, and you've got a professor who's been teaching you how to write them, you have a set of conventions, sort of like the gender conventions that Falconi was talking about before. You have a set of conventions that you can recognize. Now, you might not be able to articulate what they are, spell them out, but you know them when you see them. And so you begin to adopt those conventions in your writing. And the fact is you must be doing so well enough to pass as writing the same as your male counterparts. Even though some people have argued that legal discourse is essentially a kind of male discourse,
yeah.
Generally I think they've done that without evidence. That's sort of a thing that people just believe. My experience anecdotally, having taught these kinds of courses for many years, is that the women don't have any more difficulty learning how to do this kind of writing than the men do. But what they're doing is they're seeing models and they're following those models, and they're doing it just the same as the men are.
Falconi, let me ask you then the same question, which is, why do these differences in speech that are often influenced by society and culture and our upbringing, frankly, do not lap over, at least in Brian's study, in professional written communication?
Well, I think Brian has given a pretty good answer. It's because when men and women are being trained to write in that exact way. Now, at the undergraduate level, for example, even though there are generally loose models for writing papers, we're not necessarily dictating the quality or the kind of vocabulary that men and women are using, right? So often you're translating the way that you speak. And so if you speak in a way that conforms to certain kinds of gender expectations, you're more florid in your writing or in your speech because you're a woman, chances are you're going to kind of express yourself in that in a similar way. But in terms of, for example, styles of argument, it's not clear to me that there's a huge difference. There might be styles, there might be differences in vocabulary. Hmm. And also because often women are kind of educated, trained, acculturated through their families, society, to always trivialize themselves, right? I mean, this is kind of the basis for a lot of women's studies, gender studies, which is to say, to always be self-deprecating because this is more acceptable than to be assertive and aggressive. And so when you're writing, you can see that would translate into, well, I think, or my opinion is, much more so than, I would say, you know, men of the same age who would just say, hey, this is the truth, these are facts, because they're not actually pressured into insisting that this is just their opinion.
My guests are Brian Larson, who's a professor of rhetoric and technical communication at Georgia Tech, and Emory professor Falconi Scheff. We're talking about Brian's recent study that finds men and women don't communicate differently when it comes to writing. And we would love to hear from you out there. Do you think men and women write differently or talk differently? You can call us at 404-500-9457 or just post to Facebook or Twitter. And here, Brian, may be the sticking point, because legal writing is very different than almost any other kind of writing, is it not? So we oftentimes, especially when we're thinking about, say, a novelist, say it's important that we include female novelists because you need women to be able to see, and both women and men to see you know, the female perspective. So what if we're not writing a technical brief? What if we're not writing a court reporting, and we're writing something like a memo to our staff? Are women, do you think, more likely to write in that mitigating knowledge? I may be wrong, but I think this is true, but...
Yeah, so there was another study that came out this year by some folks at the University of Southern Alabama. I'm not really sure what the name of the school is, but they looked at the same kind of, well, they used a different study design, but they looked at a similar question with regard to students in business communication. And they found, again, that there were very few differences between male and female writers. So I think if you think about it in terms of professional communication, we should anticipate that there might be more similarities than differences.
Certainly, as opposed to when we get into fiction.
Well, or letter writing. I mean, the early studies that looked at differences in letter writing found that that women were writing more on this involved end of the involved informational spectrum, so more use of verbs describing interior mental states, more use of first-person pronouns, for instance, like I and we, instead of third-person pronouns like he and they. That kind of writing, and Twitter, for instance, if you think about Twitter, there are some studies that show that women are more prone to use certain emoticons or strings of exclamation marks in their tweets than men are. So that reminds me a little bit, again, of the Friends excerpt you use, right? The volume and the intensity of the conversation the women were having compared to the men is reflected also on Twitter. But that's not a professional context. Women aren't trained to write in that situation. They're translating what they might say out loud into their tweets,
and I think for better or for worse, you know, women. It at some level, it's much more acceptable for women to be much more emotionally expressive than it is for men. And so, if that's how you were writing, and even in terms of novel writing, 17th, 18th, 19th century in the Western world, writing fiction was one of the few accepted modes of expression but professional vocation, right? So you could actually be a novelist when the rest of the professions were closed to you.
Although I should mention that there were a number of well-known novelists who wrote under the man's name,
mm-hmm.
George Eliot, for example, mm-hmm. who was really Marianne Evans, because they wanted to get more success and be taken more seriously. And we should mention that very few people knew a woman was writing the novel. They couldn't tell the difference.
So in a way, that kind of confirms the study that Brian did, right? That actually, if you don't know the name, and in fact, this has a lot to do with perception, that we're perceiving women and men to be expressing themselves in different ways.
Okay, we have like 4 minutes left, and I apologize in advance for getting into what may be a sticky topic. But here's the thing. Many of our studies into the way women and men speak differently, I find impossible to separate from social norms. So they have done all these studies in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even into the 90s that show women are more likely to talk about romantic engagements. Women are more likely to talk at length, for example. But how are we to separate that from what were the accepted roles for a woman and what are the accepted topics for a woman?
Because you're talking about content. Content is different from form. And this is where the writing differences evaporate in Brian's study. It's about form. Can you show people the proper form of argumentation? Whereas what you're talking about is the kinds of topics that women talk about outside of professional contexts.
And I think some of those earlier studies about oral differences have also come under fire. I mean, so for instance, studies that look at whether women are interrupted more often than men or whether women interrupt women more often than they interrupt men don't always consider what counts as an interruption that's kind of a face-challenging interruption, sort of like, you know, Donald Trump saying wrong while Hillary Clinton is talking, versus an affiliative interruption where you're telling me a story and I say, oh, I can't believe that happened.
Which is a positive.
Right, I interrupted you, but I interrupted you in a way to reinforce your telling of the story and actually encourage you to go on. And those kinds of interruptions in some earlier studies might have been counted the same way. And they really need to be teased apart. And that's language is so complicated, and the way we use it is so complicated that the studies themselves sometimes have to be looked at real closely.
And then what, Falguni, about the sort of universally accepted truths, like women complain but they don't want a solution, whereas men hear a complaint and they want to solve it immediately. What about those kind of things?
I don't know what to tell you. I'm not a linguist. I'm not a cognitive scientist on this one. I mean, and I'm not a psychoanalyst. But, you know, I mean, it seems to me that those may actually also be acculturated, right? That this is a way in which women are taught to express themselves that's not necessarily threatening. Right? So they complain, but they're not necessarily kind of encouraged to find solutions. And I wonder if in each increasing generation, right, we are going to see a bunch of differences as people become more aware that these are different ways that we are raising men and women.
It is fascinating. That is Falguni Sheth, professor at Emory's Department of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies, and Georgia Tech professor Brian Larson. He led this study on how women and men communicate differently in writing. Thank you both so much.
Thanks.
Thank
it was
you.
Great to be here.